thank you so much.
Hi, this is Tom Cole, host of G-Strings here on WPFW every Sunday morning. I and the rest of the station's volunteers and staff would like to invite you to join the WPFW Legacy Listener Circle by making a contribution to the station's future through your estate plan. There are a lot of ways to do that, through your IRA or retirement plan, by gifting us life insurance, or through your donor-advised fund. We'd be happy to have a confidential discussion with you as you consider a planned gift to the station. Please reach out to us at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or call us at 202-588-0999. Thank you for considering becoming a part of WPFW.
I'm Candy Shannon, and you are tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
And welcome to Community Watch and Comment for Tuesday, October 29th. I'm Dave Rabin, joined by my esteemed co-host, Ray Valencia.
Good morning.
It's great to be with you. We've got a really important, interesting, compelling show for you. Charismatic Christianity's role in the January 6th violent uprising and its ongoing support for Donald Trump, the anointed one chosen by God. Those aren't my words. That's the vision of this particular charismatic Christianity movement. And we're going to talk with an expert on that subject. But first, as you might have noticed, perchance, if you're listening to our wonderful airways, we are in fundraising mode. It's not, you know, it's not a great pleasure for anybody, for you all listening, for us doing it, but it's extraordinarily important. We are not driven by commercial powers that be, no Elon Musk in this corner. We are driven by you, our listeners, our community. We're not beholden to anybody else, and we need your support, particularly need your support right now as we are facing a very expensive move out of our K Street location to better environs, and we need you to step up to keep the lights on, to finance the move. You know, none of us programmers, or virtually none of us, are making a dime on this. This is a labor of love. I'm joined by my esteemed co-host, as I said, Ray Valencia. What do you think?
Oh, my goodness. Good morning, David. You know, I just keep thinking so much about what's going on in the press world these days, right? We have Elon Musk with Twitter doing crazy things on the campaign trail. We have Jeff Bezos owning Washington Post, who is shutting down the editorial board, basically. And, you know, this is the time, you know, press freedom is important. What we're doing here, independent journalism, we're working really hard to bring truth and a perspective to our listeners. These shows have real value. We're bringing guests that are going to bring you a perspective that has been kind of scrubbed out of corporate media. But we need your support. This is the time to step up. I know you've been sitting at home thinking, you know, you need to start making a donation to support these programs. This is the day. This is the time. Please join us today to do it. Visit us at WPFWFM.org. Help us reach our goal for this show to keep us going and to move to our new station.
This is really kind of comical. I'm sitting in a car in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I just took out, with no internet access, I just took out my Google Dot for the show. So I'm going to be winging it, folks. Here we go. Maybe I'm going to be able to do something about it, but it looks like I'm winging it. And I am joined by scholar Matthew Taylor. He's a specialist looking at the whole issue of a particular strain in charismatic Christianity that he's going to inform us about. It's extremely disconcerting, you know, when I'm just listening to Amy Goodman, Democracy Now! This morning. They're talking about, you know, the enemies within Trump, that going after the enemies within, that includes folks like vicious, horrible creatures like Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff et al. And, you know, he might need to use the National Guard. He might need to use the military. It's really quite extraordinarily, quite frightening. And this is all supported and enhanced and empowered by a charismatic movement that people just don't know a lot about. Matthew Taylor is going to tell us about it. Welcome to Community Watch and Comment, Professor Taylor.
Thank you for having me, David.
It's really great having you. Tell us about the name of your book, which I got the full name of the book because I think it's important. And tell us why you entitled the book the way that you did.
So the book is called The Violent Take It by Force, the Christian Movement That Is Threatening Our Democracy. And that phrase, the violent take it by force, is actually a quote from the mouth of Jesus himself. In Matthew chapter 11, Jesus is reflecting on the recent arrest of his cousin, John the Baptist, by the proxy of the Roman Empire, a man named Herod. And he reflects upon that and gives this kind of cryptic comment that says, since the days of John the Baptist, the kingdom of heaven suffers violence, and the violent take it by force. And Christian interpreters throughout the centuries have been very divided over how to interpret this verse. Is Jesus saying something positive about violence? Most interpreters throughout history have understood this as a kind of descriptive verse, saying to be Christian, to follow the way of Christ, is to experience persecution and experience alienation from the world. Well, in the case of the Capitol riot, and I have spent the last 4 years digging deeply into the Christian influences on the Capitol riot, this verse was cited everywhere by people who were participating in the riot, people who are supporting the riot, and it was seen as a mandate to commit spiritual violence, as they understood it, to battle back the forces of Satan that they believed were hijacking the election. And this verse became a sort of license for Christians to actually participate in the violence of the January 6th insurrection, because they believed they were doing the work of the kingdom of heaven and bringing about the kingdom of heaven by putting Trump back into office.
So if I understand, they're turning on its head what Jesus was saying. Jesus was talking about the persecutors of John the Baptist, and they're taking that as a rallying cry to go after what they perceive as the forces of evil.
Yeah, and they I mean, this is the paradox, is that they perceived themselves as the persecuted. They perceived themselves as holding the kingdom of heaven that was suffering violence, and so they felt that it was justified for them to use violence to take it, and they would sometimes even insert the word back, to take it back by force. So they actually did equate the kingdom of heaven with the Trump administration.
Yeah, I mean, it's really quite extraordinary. Why don't you talk about the roots of this particular element of charismatic Christianity? It's not all of charismatic Christianity by any means, but it goes back to a man. I think he was a professor back in the 90s with a curious name of Wagner. Maybe it's pronounced Wagner. And Wagner, the composer, was a vicious anti-Semite beloved by Hitler. That's unfair to Mr. Wagner. He probably pronounces it Wagner. He's not responsible for his name, but talk about the origins of this charismatic movement back in the 90s, if you would.
So the focus of my book is a movement called the New Apostolic Reformation. I argue in the book that the NAR is what many people call it, that the NAR was central to the organizing and mobilizing of the Christian elements of the Capitol riot, which was a very, very significant part of the Capitol riot, was the Christian nationalist influences that were there, the iconography, the symbolism of Christian nationalism that was there. This was not well covered in the January 6th report or even in a lot of the news coverage of January 6th, but it was a very, very important factor. Wagner, C. Peter Wagner, was a seminary professor at Fuller Theological Seminary, which is in Pasadena, California. I actually attended Fuller Seminary. I did my master's degree there. And Wagner was an expert in what was called church growth, a kind of faddish field in evangelical theology focused on how do you produce megachurches? How do you accelerate the growth of evangelizing movements? This was his field of specialization. And he became fixated over the course of his career. He retired from Fuller in 1999. So in the 1980s and 1990s, he increasingly became fixated with this particular sector of modern Christianity, what we scholars would call the independent charismatic sector of Christianity. You can think of it as a sort of non-denominational wing of Pentecostalism, right?
So this and it's important that it's non-denominational, because according to Wagner's and other people in the movement, denominations slow you down. He wanted to speed things up, if I understand your book correctly.
Yes, absolutely. He was very antithetical to denominations. He saw them as bureaucratic and slow moving. And in fact, the other title that he had for the movement that he toyed around with early on and then eventually dropped was the post-denominational church, right? So he was trying to find a way to imagine the church outside of the kind of construct of denominations. And what he became interested in was the idea of modern day apostles and prophets. And if you know kind of your New Testament, your biblical history, right, the apostles and prophets, these are roles that are described in the New Testament as part of the leadership of early Christianity. Most Christian traditions would say that that was a thing for the time of the early church, and that more other kinds of leadership, bishops and priests and pastors and elders, have evolved out of the roles of the apostles and prophets. But for Wagner and for the new apostolic reformation, they believe that there are modern day apostles and prophets being commissioned today. And Wagner came to believe, even though he did not come from a background in this movement, he came to believe that he was one of these end times apostles who was commissioned by God to bring about a global revival that through this movement. And he called it the new apostolic reformation because he thought that it would be a change, a transformation in the way of doing church that would bring about a new branch of Christianity on the order of a Protestantism, that this would be a change in the way of doing church that would be as revolutionary as the Protestant Reformation. And he started gathering around himself networks of these wannabe apostles and prophets in the late 1990s and early 2000s. And he called that those organizations, these kind of loose networks, the new apostolic reformation. And if we fast forward to when Donald Trump emerges on the scene in 2015 and 2016 as a presidential candidate, these are some of the first leaders to embrace Donald Trump. These are some of the first Christian leaders to endorse Donald Trump. And they become the chief theological propagandists for Donald Trump, pitching him using some of their own prophecies, using their own biblical interpretations to broader evangelicalism and saying, this man, this real estate mogul and reality TV star is anointed by God for office, and we all need to get around him.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about Cyrus, the Persian king, in a moment, but I think we failed to give out some information how, just a very, very quick break here, we failed to give out information how people can contribute, I think, to this extraordinary resource that is WPFW, so important for all of us. If you care to do it by phone, 202-588-9739, at 202-588-9739, you can go online, wpfwfm.org. At the website, we've got PayPal. You can also do Cash App, $WPFW. We've got a $500 goal. We need your help very much. So please chime in. And please chime in. We would love to. This is a call-in program. This is Community Watch and Comment. We would really like to hear from you folks. This is, I think, very compelling, very interesting, but also very scary. Please chime in, 202-588-0893. A little bit different than the number to call for donations. We would particularly like to hear from folks that have some experience in the general charismatic movement. I mean, if you've got direct experience with this particular strain of the movement, we would be very interested. But even if you're just a general background with the charismatic Christianity movement, we would love to hear from you. If you could just give a little bit of context about this spiritual warfare that Wagner was a part of. You know, there's this whole other plane that's going on simultaneously, I think you could say, with the day-to-day living that we have of evil versus good it's a spiritual battle, and you need to armor up and take on the forces of evil. The problem is, as you see it, and a lot of us see it, is that Wagner takes it to another level where he's actually creating vehicles for actual violence, actual warfare. If you could just talk about that context of the spiritual battle, the charismatic that you grew up in. I mean, we would love to hear about that.
Yeah, so the basic concept of spiritual warfare in the Christian tradition, and this is a very popular idea. This is popular among evangelicals, popular among Pentecostals, popular among some Catholics. But the basic idea is that there's an invisible realm all around us, and that angels and demons, real, literal angels and demons, are battling for control of this invisible spiritual realm, and that those battles affect humanity. And so if you believe in demon possession, if you believe in oppression by spiritual forces, if you believe that there are forces of darkness, spiritual forces of darkness that are out there, well, then you're kind of adjacent to this world of spiritual warfare. And so the framework of spiritual warfare, though, is that Christians can participate in this invisible cosmic combat through Christian practices like prayer or singing worship songs or maybe the more extreme end, even performing an exorcism on someone, right? Casting a demon out of someone. Now, when Wagner and his kind of NAR leaders in the 1990s begin to grab hold of these spiritual warfare ideas, Wagner comes to believe through some of these prophecies in the group that the spiritual warfare, the kind of general understanding of it that many people have in practice, is fine, but it's not sufficient. And so he convenes a kind of framework that he calls strategic level spiritual warfare, where in this framework, the apostles and prophets become generals of spiritual warfare who have the capacity to see into the supernatural realm, to figure out who are the demons, the major demons, not just those kind of ground level, kind of garden variety demons, who are the commander level demons that are really controlling the country. And so they begin mapping out and understand, and this understanding of, okay, here are the high level demons. And Wagner would even call those high level demons territorial spirits, because he believed that they were high level, commander level demons who could control literal physical territory, and that the work of the church in doing spiritual warfare was to conquer spiritual territory, to drive out the forces of Satan in order for the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God, to come about in the United States and ultimately in the entire world. And when you look at the Christian manifestations that we see all around the Capitol riot, things like Christians blowing shofars, these ram's horns that originate in Jewish ritual usage that Christians have appropriated, things like Christians standing around singing worship music as there's an active riot going on just yards away from them, the way to make sense of this, the kind of decoder ring to understand all those Christian manifestations, or at least many of the Christian manifestations around the Capitol, is spiritual warfare. Christians, most of the Christians who showed up at the Capitol riot believed that a demonic conspiracy was hijacking the election. It was behind the nefarious Democrats and the disloyal Republicans that they perceived as aligned against Trump. And so they were there to battle the demons that they believed had taken over the Capitol and were hijacking the election. And I have identified 60, at least 60 independent charismatic Christian leaders who showed up on January 6th to participate in the spiritual warfare. And that ranges everywhere from a local pastor of a local congregation all the way to global charismatic celebrity prophets who have millions of followers around the world.
I mean, and these 60 some odd leaders of this whole movement, were they actually most of them on site at the Capitol on January 6th?
Yes, most of them were around the Capitol. Only, as far as I can tell, only 7 out of the 60 actually went into the Capitol and have faced prosecution over that. But the vast majority of them were leading the crowds in these spiritual warfare practices. Some, you had roving bands of prophets going around prophesying all around the Capitol. Some of them had even PA systems with microphones and were praying prayers of exorcism toward the Capitol in the middle of the riot. This was going on all around the riot. There was a real spirituality to January 6th built around these concepts of spiritual warfare and of battling back the demons that they believed were aligned against Donald Trump.
We're about to take a break, but, you know, and they're displaying this flag. If you could just touch briefly on the appeal to heaven flag that was there. It's also, I'm sure it's not there anymore, was out outside the speaker, the Republican Speaker of the House office, and at the beach home of one of our Supreme Court justices, Mr. Alito. If you could just touch briefly on that flag, it's rather extraordinary.
Yeah, in 2013, one of Peter Wagner's disciples, one of his mentees, a man named Dutch Sheets, discovers this Appeal to Heaven flag. It's actually a flag from the Revolutionary War. It was commissioned by George Washington to fly over the Massachusetts Navy. It was one of dozens of flags that were used in the Revolutionary War. The Appeal to Heaven flag, it's a white flag with a green pine tree at the center and the phrase "an appeal to heaven" across the top. It's actually a quote from the philosopher John Locke. But what Sheets receives this flag in 2013, believes that he gets a prophecy. He believes he's a prophet, believes he receives a prophecy about this flag, that it is a symbol of a spiritual warfare campaign to recapture America, to have a new spiritual revolution in America. And of course, this is right in the middle of the second Obama administration. And he hated Obama and felt that Obama was a secret Muslim and was destroying the country. And so the Appeal to Heaven flag became this coded symbol of a Christian revolution, a Christian nationalist revolution driven by spiritual warfare and prophecy to recapture America, realign it with what they believe were its biblical origins. And this, he begins popularizing this flag. He writes a book about the Appeal to Heaven flag, goes all over the country popularizing this flag, getting Christian lawmakers and leaders to fly the Appeal to Heaven flag. And it becomes this kind of coded symbol of Christian nationalism. And yes, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, as far as I know, still flies an Appeal to Heaven flag. It was given to him by a friend of Dutch Sheets outside of his congressional office. We see on January 6th, dozens, maybe even hundreds of these Appeal to Heaven flags all around the Capitol. And it's a sign of just how much of this spiritual warfare activity was going on that day.
There were hundreds of these flags. I, you know, if you're not looking for it, you're just not aware. I mean, there's so much craziness going on. Did you want to chime in, Ms. Valencia?
Yeah, I did. I just have something to ask Matthew. You know, I'm sure you've seen this on the campaign trail now since the assassination attempt with Trump. There was a flag flying in Butler, PA that day, and it got spun around, and they were calling it the Angel Flag.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you? I kind of sense this is going to become a bigger thing as we get, you know, into Election Day and post-Election Day. And can you tie some of this in with the Angel Flag we're seeing?
Yeah, so part of charismatic spirituality is re-enchanting the world, right? Understanding the world is filled with these supernatural manifestations, and everything becomes enchanted in that worldview. And if they're particularly fixated with Trump, which they really are today, they have attached all these spiritual narratives to Donald Trump. And as they've done that, you have this new kind of iconography that has emerged. And the Appeal to Heaven flag is very much part of that iconography of spirituality around Trump, the Cyrus, the shofar. And then with this other flag that was seen, it was actually an American flag. It was flying at the Butler, Pennsylvania rally that had gotten twisted around in the wind and had a vaguely kind of cross shape, angel shape, that then, because it was witnessed on the same day as the assassination attempt, which Donald Trump's Christian supporters have interpreted as a sign of God's special protection and providence over Donald Trump.
Oh my.
That flag itself, the angel flag, has, especially through people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, has been popularized as another part of this Christian iconography around Donald Trump. And I will just note that Donald Trump is a figure, an unprecedented figure in American politics. We have never had a national level political figure who has so many spiritual narratives and so much religious attachment built up around them, that they're to the point where many Christians in America today view Donald Trump as a quasi-messianic figure, a deliverer, a savior who is sent by God for the sake of American Christianity.
I mean, it's so bizarre. We need to take a fundraising break, but let's start with the whole Cyrus connection with Trump after we take our brief break.
We have a caller.
I know, and we're going to get to that caller as soon as we have a little fundraising here. Please hold on, caller. We're so happy that you're chiming in. We want to hear from you, but we are in fundraising mode. Folks, we've got to move. It's a big, big charge. It's a big a challenge for us, and we need your help. Please do chime in. 202-588-9739 is the number to call. No amount is too large. No amount is too small. You can also go online, wpfwfm.org. You've got a PayPal option on the website. We've got Cash App, $WPFWFM. We've got a $500 goal. And speaking of that, we've already crossed the $500 goal, right, Ray?
Oh, no. We need some help. We got to keep pedaling here. We got to pedal a little faster, folks, to reach our goal. We need your help. I mean, this is the time. I know you've been sitting there thinking about it, right? This is time to make your donation. We're coming into the year end. You could think about your tax deduction. Become a sustainer. You know, that $100 donation or $500 donation that would help us reach our goal would be segmented throughout the year. So it wouldn't be one amount. It would be, you know, throughout the year. And that really helps us. And, you know, press freedom isn't free. We need your help. We're listener supported. We need you right now to get into our new offices, to continue to play great music, have public affairs, speaking truth to power. And this is the time to come together as a community.
Yeah, thank you so much. I mean, it's really true. I mean, there's so many expressions of how capitalism is overwhelming the system. I mean, look at what's happening with our electoral system. You know, get $1 million if you, you know, vote in Pennsylvania. You know, get $1 million from Elon Musk or register or whatever the incentive is. I mean, he's buying votes. That's illegal, folks. And it should be illegal to have to listen to the, I mean, when I turn on commercial radio, it's just overwhelming with the commercialization of the airwaves. But you don't have to deal with that on WPFW, but you do have to deal with us doing some fundraising. We promise to try and keep this to 3 minutes, and by God, we're going to do it. Maybe it's four. Okay. We want to get back to our guest. Please chime in, folks. Make the call that makes a difference, 202-588-9739, or go online, wpfwfm.org. And back to Matthew Taylor. And we were going to touch on Cyrus before we go to the particulars of how Trump has ingratiated himself so bizarrely with the charismatic movement and Christian nationalism in general. If you could talk about the king of Persia, Mr. Cyrus.
Yeah, so the backstory here is when Donald Trump entered the presidential race in the summer of 2015, he recognized as a Republican candidate that he would need to win over evangelical voters. But he didn't know evangelical leaders, and so he turned to his closest spiritual advisor, his own personal pastor, a woman named Paula White Cain, and he asked her to be his liaison to evangelicals. But Paula White Cain is not a conventional evangelical either. She is a prosperity gospel, independent charismatic, televangelist, apostle, and megachurch pastor. And so she starts reaching out to the people that she knows. She starts reaching out to her fellow charismatic celebrities, televangelists, and these types. And they start setting up a series of meetings at Trump Tower in the fall of 2015. And these are some of the first religious leaders to meet with Donald Trump as a candidate, first religious leaders to endorse him. And in these meetings is a New Apostolic Reformation apostle named Lance Wolnow. And he claims that in his meeting with Donald Trump, he receives a prophecy that Donald Trump is a type of an Isaiah 45 Cyrus. And if you've forgotten that day in Sunday school, Cyrus is the emperor of the Persian Empire in the 6th century BCE. Of course, the Jewish people are taken away into exile by the Babylonian Empire. Cyrus and the Persians conquer the Babylonians, and Cyrus is the one who sends the Jewish people back to rebuild Jerusalem and rebuild the temple. And so in Isaiah chapter 45, the prophet Isaiah is reflecting upon this figure of Cyrus, who kind of paradoxically has done this great service for the people of God, but is not himself a person of God, is not a follower of Yahweh, is not a follower of the Israelite God. And in this passage in Isaiah 45, God speaking through Isaiah calls Cyrus his anointed. And that word anointed in Hebrew is Mashiach, where we get the term Messiah. And so Cyrus, in the vision of the prophet Isaiah, is a type of a Messiah. Not the Messiah, he's a Messiah. He is a savior for Israel. And so Wolnow, coming along in the fall of 2015, is saying, Donald Trump is like Cyrus. He is not a good Christian. He is not a follower of God per se, but God's hand is upon Donald Trump, And God has anointed him to be a sort of a secular savior, to deliver conservative Christians back from cultural exile and to be a vindicator of conservative Christianity in America. And this image of Trump as Cyrus takes hold and becomes one of the major propaganda pieces in terms of selling Donald Trump to evangelicals. And if you go back into that 2016 primary and look at the news coverage and look at how Christians were talking about Donald Trump, this image of Trump as Cyrus is everywhere. And it was one of the major rationales that was given to evangelicals for how they could understand this seemingly very profane figure like Trump being an instrument in the hand of God. And even today, you find people making these biblical comparisons to Trump, finding these different parallels with biblical figures, and using that as a way to message that Donald Trump has a special anointing from God.
It's really quite wild. I mean, but there's a Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times, and it's a curse, and we sure are living in an interesting time. I hope we still have that caller. Forgive me for not getting to you sooner. Are you with us? Please chime in. Your name, if you care to, where you're calling from, and your question or comment. If you can keep it relatively short, that would be great.
I'll try to keep it as short as possible. First of all, I'm a Christian that come out of the Bill and Dan Berrigan era. I'm 76 years old. I was a conscientious objector myself, spent almost 2 years at Ashland Federal Youth Center. Besides that, my question to you is, sir, and because I am a Christian out of that era, I believe that there was no pushback. My question, is there pushback from the remnant of the church that knows Jesus Christ, that know that true teachings of Jesus Christ? Where is the church today? Where is the church that was out there in the streets during Vietnam, during the years of the war in Iraq? We were out there. My son was over in Korea, etc. Where is the church today? Why isn't the Catholic, Protestant, why aren't we out there? Where are our leaders? Have they not heard what you are talking about? They sit up all day, they read, they understand. Most of us are out here working or fixated with. So it seems like we have surrendered to this.
Yeah.
And my question to you, perhaps that God's will be done, but perhaps this is a wake-up call. And if Mr. Trump does get into office, it possibly is because we laid down to allow this to happen, because we embrace materialism and being satisfied with this culture of selfishness.
You know what? We need to get back to our guest. I really appreciate you calling in. It's a very important point that you're making, Matthew Taylor. What do you think?
No, it's a very important question. Let me give a quick answer and then give a little bit more of a historical answer. There are voices that are pushing back on Christian nationalism, voices that are pushing back on this theologization and spiritualization of Donald Trump and calling that even blasphemy. But those voices tend to be more quiet today and are not as amplified by media or not as drawn into the political fray. And so there's groups like Christians Against Christian Nationalism. There's groups like Faithful America that are even protesting at some of these things. Those protests are pretty small, frankly. And compared to the sizes of the crowds these Christian nationalist gatherings will draw, it's meaningful, but it's not in any way comparable. Part of the challenge that we're facing in the United States right now is that the religious right, which would include parts of the Roman Catholic Church, parts of the Latter-day Saint Church, parts of the Eastern Orthodox Church, and mostly a lot of elements out of American Protestantism, is far more organized, far more mobilized, far more galvanized than the religious left and the religious center in America. We've been going through a process over the last 60 years where the religious left, liberal Catholics, liberal Protestants, liberal people from any religious tradition really have been hemorrhaging out of those churches to the point where the demographics right now are much more on the side of conservative Christianity. I mean, overall, Christianity in America has been declining. In 1990, about 90% of Americans identified as Christian. Today, it's down to around 63-64%. Wow. And the forces that are growing, the communities that are growing, tend to be more charismatic, more non-denominational, and more conservative in their orientation. And so that's where the energy is in American Christianity today. The energy is around these kind of conservative ideas and identities and around Trump. And the other voices, are not getting picked up by media because they are seen as less interesting, but also they just are, they don't have as much demographic heft behind them.
Yeah, I appreciate your call. And we'd like to hear from other folks if you care to, 202-588-0893. We're trying to do a lot, take calls, raise some money, and speak to our fascinating, important guests. But we'd love to hear from folks. We are Community Watch and Comment, 202-588-0893. If you could talk about any racist tendencies in this movement, I think it's terribly important and probably not something that's accentuated, but to whatever extent that might be the case that there's racist inclinations, if you could talk about that.
So we often will talk, and you'll hear the phrase white Christian nationalism, sometimes used synonymously with Christian nationalism. White Christian nationalism is a real thing. I mean, most of the Christian nationalists in America are white and understand whiteness as being connected to their Christian identity, right? They see themselves as the norm, and they are trying to impose that norm on the rest of society. The New Apostolic Reformation and really the entire independent charismatic sector is distinct within that world. It's a very multi-ethnic sector and very globally connected. So right now, the fastest growing form of Christianity in the United States is independent charismatic, non-denominational charismatic Christianity. The fastest growing form of Christianity globally is independent charismatic Christianity. And so you even have immigrant communities that are bringing these forms of spirituality into the U.S. It's not that the U.S. is simply exporting these things. There are these kind of transnational flows of charismatic theologies and ideas and identities. And so this is a pretty multi-ethnic sector. I mean, I went to a large New Apostolic Reformation gathering on the National Mall just a couple weeks ago called the Million Women March. There's actually tens of thousands, maybe 100,000 people there, but it's definitely not a million. But it was a big gathering, and it was actually the most multi-ethnic Christian crowd I think I've ever been in. So this is a pretty multi-ethnic group. I'm not saying there's not racism in these circles. There's definitely racism in these circles, but it's a complicated kind of racism built around more of this kind of multi-ethnic, more of an inclusive kind of vibe within conservative Christianity. And then you also have more white Christian nationalist movements that kind of complement and come alongside this. So right now, what we're seeing is actually a pretty complicated landscape of Christian nationalism. And part of what the Trump's campaign's strategy has been in this cycle, they recognize, I think, that they have maxed out their votes among white Christians. And so they are doing very intentional outreach to communities of Christians of color. And you have to remember that 25% of the U.S. population is Christians of color. Right? It's a very sizable chunk of the U.S. population are people who identify as Christians who are people of color.
And wait a minute. Matthew, could you repeat that? 25% of the entire population?
Yes.
No.
25% of the U.S. States population is Christians of color.
Of Black. Okay.
Not Black Got Christians, you. But all Christians of color. And that, so that includes, I mean, I think it's about 8% Black Protestant, about 8% Hispanic Catholic or Latino Catholic, 4% Latino Protestant, and then a variety of other kind of ethnic groups and kind of alignment with different traditions. So it's about that 25% is about half Catholic, half Protestant at this stage. But it's the Protestant Christians of color who have especially gravitated towards Trump, in part, I would argue, because they are occupying some of these same non-denominational spaces and same charismatic theologies that have been used to propagandize and support Donald Trump.
It's fascinating and scary at the same time. So these people are compelled by religiosity to move in a certain direction that might be contrary to all their other interests, economic or otherwise. I mean, it's really quite, it's extraordinary and frightening. Let's take a little break.
we want to keep this short, but we're making a bargain with you. Short fundraising, because we know you've been listening to fundraising for several weeks now, and we do want to shorten it if we can, but please help us out. What are the numbers to call, Ms. Valencia?
Oh, please call 202-588-9739. Visit us at WPFWFM.org to make your donation. We need you to call. We need you to get online, visit us online. We're not even close to reaching our goal. This is great public affairs programming. This is what we need for the community to learn more about. What is driving so many people in terms of this election, in terms of how people view their worldview in economics, politics, everything. So this is really important. Also, we have a big move to make. We need to move our offices and we need your help. This is the time to step up and make that donation. We really appreciate everything you can offer. Thank you so much.
Yep. And we should, Ray mentioned earlier, this is tax deductible. We're coming towards the end of the year, and this is tax deductible, folks. Can't think of a better donation than to a community resource. That is WPFWFM. We know you're inundated, at least most of us are, with financial requests from a certain party, a certain presidential candidate. It's overwhelming. We're with you, but we are the still small voice that's extraordinarily important, WPFW. So please chime in, and please chime in. Let's get back to the show. Please chime in. I think we can fit in one more caller, 202-588-0893. We just have about 10 minutes, less than 10 minutes, Matthew Taylor. Before we miss out on this, you've got, talk about anointed.
We have a caller.
Oh, we have a caller. Excellent. Thank you so much for checking in. Your name, if you care to, where you're calling from, your question or comment.
Hello, do you hear me?
We can.
Very good. I'm a Buddhist, and we keep talking about the Christians and how they're acting and not acting. Buddhism teaches cause equals effect. So if we make the right calls of registering and voting because of what we love, which is our country as it is, and making it better, we will win. Dr. King says only love can trump hate. So that's the point. So I wanted to make that point and encourage everyone to register and vote, because this is the greatest opportunity we've ever had to have the power of our vote be counted and make a difference. And I would like to stay in touch with you, because I did produce a song to get out the vote. On YouTube, I have 558,000 hits, and I cannot get PFW to play it. I don't understand that. It's right there inside your station. Ask the manager, the former manager, to give it to you. It's a song to get out the vote, and I don't know why they have not used it. So please put me on hold, receive my number, so I can give it to you if no one else gives it to you to get out the vote.
All righty. Your thoughts, Matthew Taylor?
So I just a thought is that what we are experiencing right now in the United States with this surge of Christian nationalism is not unique to the United States, is not unique to Christianity. Right now, we are experiencing a surge in forms of religious nationalism around the globe. And there's various theories as to why that is happening. But everything from the rise of Hindu nationalism, the Hindutva movement in India, Buddhist nationalism in Sri Lanka and Myanmar, religious Zionism in Israel, Christian nationalism in Hungary and in Brazil and Russia, right? So this is a tendency all over the world that we're experiencing, and the United States is just one part, one element of that. And so I think we do need to think about this in kind of a global perspective, and recognizing that we are experiencing, we're entering into an era of rising religious nationalism, and that actually presents a real danger for democracies around the world. This is not, again, something that's unique to the United States.
Yep. We are running out of time. I want your thoughts, if you would, on J.D. Vance, the, no pun intended, anointed one, carrying on the anointment from Donald Trump, the young version, arguably more dangerous in a certain way. Your thoughts? I read somewhere that J.D. Vance, in 2019, converted to Catholicism. To what extent do you think he's influenced by this whole charismatic Christian nationalism?
I don't know how much J.D. Vance is influenced by charismatic Christian nationalism. I mean, he did show up a couple weeks ago at Lance Wallnow, the same Cyrus prophecy guy. He's doing a tour right now of the swing states trying to mobilize voters for Donald Trump. And J.D. Vance showed up at Lance Wallnow's tour and recorded a live town hall from there on Lance Wallnow's podcast. So there's definitely collaboration going on there. Vance is much more influenced by the Catholic wing of Christian nationalism and some of the far right Catholic circles that themselves are very active today, especially through kind of radical traditionalist Catholic circles and Catholic integralist kind of influences. And that is another wing of American Christian nationalism that is itself very aggressive and militant today, and that is working in tandem in some ways. I would say that's the more intellectual side of American Christian nationalism, where the charismatics that I study tend to supply more the populist side. So J.D. Vance is more into kind of the intellectual architecture of Christian nationalism, where the folks that I'm looking at are the people who put people in the streets.
Right, because what you're talking about is just one part of this whole Christian nationalism. Is not, you know, it's not the whole picture. There's different elements to it. It's complicated, but important to understand. We're getting near the end here. What do you think about Donald Trump? I think it was back in late July, talking to Christian activists, I think in Florida, and he says it's very important that you vote on November 5th. And if you do that, you won't have to do it again. We're going to fix it. And I don't understand why the Harris campaign hasn't, you know, been blaring this from the mountaintops. Like, what exactly are you talking about? And then he went on, Fox that was following Monday, 3 days later, and they gave him an opportunity to walk it back, and he didn't. He doubled down. And I just wondered, does this in any shape or form tie in with Christian nationalism, with the Christian charismatic movement, or is this more related to his tendencies towards fascism? You've probably heard of Curtis Yarkin. We talked about him last week, who's pushing for a monarchy. You know, democracy's, you know, antithetical to freedom. Your thought, does this speech by Trump tie in with the subject that you're discussing?
Oh, it definitely ties in. I mean, it's part of Donald Trump's populist authoritarian appeal. I mean, this is the MAGA movement that has formed around Trump, that has taken over the Republican Party, is a populist authoritarian movement. And in populist authoritarian movements, you galvanize people using their fears, using their hopes, using their emotions to gather around a leader who claims that they are the one who's going to solve everything. And in democracy, that is one of the most toxic things you can find, is a leader who promises to solve everything, because that's not the concept of a democracy. In a democracy, the people choose, and it's a process of collaboration and working together and compromise. And so Donald Trump has really leveraged these kind of theological frames that have been built around him, these prophecy frames, these messianic frames. And he's speaking that language when he says things like this to Christians. He's saying, using this kind of apocalyptic reasoning, I can be the final solution. I can fix everything so that you won't have to worry anymore about your Christianity and your Christian privilege. I will secure it for you. And that is a very, very dangerous message, because it plays into Christians' fears and Christians' hopes. And it offers them a sense of, if it's do or die in this election. That is a very worrying sentiment, again, in a democracy. When you start using the frame of apocalypse around an election, you're saying we won't have elections after this. And I think that is part of the dark promise of Donald Trump, is he's saying, I will end American elections.
You know, given Trump's fascist tendencies, it's ironic they're using the term final solution, which is a term used for the Holocaust. That was the Nazi idea. We're going to implement the final solution. And it's extremely frightening. We've got like a minute left. What do we do about this? You know, regardless of who wins on November 5th or, you know, whenever the date is that we actually determine a winner. I mean, we're going to be left with, you know, a sizable part of the country that are true believers. What do we do about it? Or what does the Christian community perhaps more accurately do about it?
Underneath the civic and political crisis that we are experiencing right now in American society is an epistemic crisis, a crisis in how we know what we know. And Donald Trump's lies about the 2020 election fueled January 6th, but they've also been fueling conspiracy theories throughout the American populace throughout the last 4 years, to the point where a third of all Americans believe that the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump. And when you look among American Christians, especially white evangelicals, it's more like two-thirds believe that.
Wow.
So there's a religious dimension to the epistemic crisis. And even if we get through this election and our democracy's intact and we're moving forward, we are still going to have to deal with those epistemic problems, because they are fueling this sense of alienation and frustration and the belief among many Americans that our government itself is illegitimate. And it's very hard to have a pluralistic democracy if a third of the populace is not living in political and factual reality.
And give us the full name of your book, which as I said earlier, I don't have my notes, but forgive me. I want the exact title of your book so people can check it out. And just can't thank you enough, Matthew Taylor, for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. And the title of the book is The Violent Ticket by Force, The Christian Movement That is Threatening Our Democracy. You can find it anywhere books are sold.
Thank you. And, you know, you might want to think twice about getting it on Amazon, given what's been happening. But there are other ways to obtain it. Matthew Taylor, thank you very much for being with us. And thank you for your important work.
It's been a pleasure and a privilege. Thank you, David.
Really enjoyed it. Take care.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
So what do you think, Ms. Valencia?
I think that was a really interesting program. You know, it's like, yeah. So this is why we're here, folks, you know, volunteering, because this story is so important, an understanding of what's driving a large part of our electorate and what triggers are being pulled. And so, you know, this kind of program is really important. We need your support. This is a Truth to Power time. You know, we are here to create a just world with you, and we need your help and your participation. Please join us at WPFWFM.org. You could call us at 202-588-9739 to make that donation. We need your support. It's tax deductible, and you're just going to feel great about it.
Yep. This is a labor of love, people. As I mentioned earlier, you know, it takes a fair amount of effort to create this show. It might seem easy, but I was up half the night, and Ray is often up half the night preparing for this program. It's a labor of love. We don't make a dime, but we do need you to step up and show the love. We know these are difficult times. Inflation has hit all of us. As I said earlier, we've got these political pressures on us to donate. I understand, but please step up and show the love for this important resource. Don't let capitalism win out. We need to fight it with every fiber in our being and support the wonderful, important, independent media that is WPFW. And we also, by the way, provide just extraordinary music of all different kinds, and you're not interrupted continually by commercials. So please show the love. And what are the numbers again, Ms. Valencia? 202. I didn't give it.
Sorry.
She thought she was done.
Think again. No, it's 202-588-9739. And this is the time. I mean, it's an investment in independent journalism. When you listen to WPFW, you're going to hear a wide range of stories. And thank you so much.
Yeah, it's real important. We're going to have to end it there. Got to go to our newscast. I want to thank our amazing engineer, Mike Nocella. He pulls us through continually. We really appreciate it. Check out David Whetstone at the same hour
tomorrow on Wednesday. I'm sure he's going to have a fascinating program. Stay tuned for the wonderful lady, Muir, who's going to have a great music program for you. I want to especially thank Mackenzie Olson for the kernel, the idea for this program. Really appreciate it. And I just want to thank you all for listening, and I want to thank you for donating. We are no doubt nowhere near our goal, but please chime in and thank you for the donations you've made in the past. With Ray Valencia, I'm Dave Raben. Take care. Have a good, wonderful week.
Pacific Radio, I'm Scott Baba. Gaza's health ministry says an Israeli airstrike on a five-story building where displaced Palestinians were sheltering in the northern Gaza Strip killed at least 60 people, more than half of them women and children. Also today, Lebanon's militant group Hezbollah said it has chosen Sheikh Naim Qassem as its new top leader following the killing of Hassan Nasrallah in an Israeli airstrike last month. The group said in a statement that Hezbollah's decision-making Shura Council elected Qassem, who had been Nasrallah's deputy leader for over three decades, as the new secretary general. Hezbollah vowed to continue with Nasrallah's policies, quote, until victory is achieved. Meanwhile, Israel's parliament passed bills banning the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees from operating in Israel and the Palestinian territories. The agency, known as UNRWA, is the main provider of aid in the Gaza Strip and provides education, health, and other basic services to millions of Palestinian refugees across the region, including in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. Israel accuses UNRWA of turning a blind eye to militant groups it says have infiltrated the agency to siphon off aid. The UN agency denies the allegations, saying it quickly responds to any allegations of wrongdoing by its employees. Ollie Barrett has more.
Israel's allies are condemning a vote by the Israeli parliament to ban the UN's Palestinian Refugee Agency from operating in the country. UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer says Britain is gravely concerned. US State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller says Israel should not move ahead with the ban.
UNRWA plays a critical, important role in delivering humanitarian assistance to civilians that need it in Gaza. There's nobody that can replace them right now in the middle of the crisis. So we continue to urge the government of Israel to pause the implementation of this legislation.
Israel has previously accused UNRWA staff of involvement in the October the 7th attacks and diverting aid in Gaza. I'm Ollie Barrett.
China says all systems are ready to launch the next crew to its orbiting space station. The two men and one woman will replace the astronauts who have lived on the Tiangong space station for the last 6 months. Charles de Ledesma reports.
China's ready to send the latest crewed mission to its orbiting space station, another step in its project to become a major power in space within coming decades. The Shenzhou 19 spaceship, with its three-person crew, is due to blast into space from the launch center in northwest China at 4:27 a.m. local time early on Wednesday morning. Zhang Wei, a scientist of space utilization with Chinese Academy of Sciences, says China experts hope that more space experiment results can be used on Earth. Therefore, we're mainly conducting experiments related to life sciences and biotechnology, as well as materials technology. Besides putting a space station into orbit, China's space agency has landed an explorer on Mars and also aims to put a person on the moon before 2030, which would make China the second nation after the US to do so. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Two ballot drop boxes in the Pacific Northwest were damaged in a suspected arson attack just over a week before Election Day, destroying hundreds of ballots at one location in Vancouver, Washington. At the other, in neighboring Portland, Oregon, it appears a fire suppression system worked to contain the blaze and limited the number of ballots damaged to three. Authorities are reviewing surveillance footage as they try to identify who is responsible. Farah Siddiqui has more.
Oregon County official Jessica Vega Peterson is promising to protect civil rights in spite of arson attacks on ballot boxes.
In these times where we're seeing events like this morning, along with claims of rigged elections and illegal voters used as scare and avoidance tactics, Multnomah County is committed to the fundamental protection of our democracy.
The FBI says it's looking for the driver of a Volvo after three fires in Portland and Vancouver, Washington, that destroyed hundreds of ballots. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
I'm Scott Baba for Pacifica Radio.